The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
President Biden comes down hard on the U.S. steel deal. Reaction from the union and the AFL-CIO. Meanwhile, 7,000 Daimler truck workers vote to go on strike. And today on the show, the latest from the Valley Labor Report and the bricklayers and allied craft workers. Welcome to the Monday, March 18th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Adam Keller is going to be our first guest on the show today. He serves as co-host and co-producer of the Valley Labor Report website, TVLR.fm. By the way, the Valley Labor Report, much like America's Workforce, is growing in audience. They are Alabama's only union talk show, now airing on four radio stations across three states, in addition to being online via podcasting, YouTube, and Facebook. Adam has spent more than a decade as an activist and organizer in northern Alabama and has been involved in a variety of campaigns. In fact, earlier this month, he was at the Poor People's Campaign, their march and rally that was in Montgomery, Alabama. That was a national day of action with events in over 30 state capitals and the District of Columbia. And he spoke on the need for Medicaid expansion. The day after that, March 3rd, he was in Selma for the 59th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. And he was asked by the League of Women Voters to speak at their Next Generation Powering Democracy event, which is targeting mostly college-age students. When it comes to lawmaking, unfortunately, a lot of bad bills we're going to run down. Number one, restrictions on absentee voting rights, private school vouchers, they want to expand them. And also, get this, a ban on DEI and divisive concepts. Organizing. CWA, he's got two unions we're going to talk about, the CWA and his union, IATSE, on the work that they're doing to organize new workers. So we'll touch on all of that and more with Adam Keller. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Liliana Calderon. Now, Liliana is a bricklayer, a proud union bricklayer out of Local 21 in Illinois. She's got about 17 years experience, in March being Women's History Month. We're profiling a number of very successful women, whether they're running a union or they got involved in the trades, and she's moving right up the ladder. Lily is going to talk about a job readiness program from the Chicago Women in the Trades organization. And she's also part of the Administrative District Council of Illinois in Chicago. And she is one of the leaders in the Bricklayers Women's Group, BAC Sisters Rise. And that stands for Resource for Inclusion, Success, and Empowerment. Liliana is also a committee member of NABTU's Tradeswomen Committee, and as such is the key person planning the annual NABTU Tradeswomen Build Nations Conference. And I'll tell you, that conference has been growing in size over the years. So she's going to talk about women in the trade, especially in the bricklayers, and how the unions themselves are restructuring to be more inclusive with women's committees, promoting proper fitting PPE, maternity leave, childcare, you name it. They're doing everything possible to try to get people in the trades because they need them. They need them. So Liliana Calderon. By the way, the website for the bricklayers, bacweb.org. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options to clients nationwide. President Biden came out in opposition to the planned sale of U.S. Steel to Nippon Steel of Japan, saying on Thursday of last week that the U.S. needs to maintain strong American steel companies powered by American steel workers. He added, U.S. Steel has been an iconic American steel company for more than a century, and it is vital for it to remain an American steel company that is domestically owned and operated. Amen to that. Senator Bob Casey out of Pennsylvania, who's up for re-election, applauded Biden's statement, saying, I'll work like hell against any deal that leaves our steel workers behind. Now, Nippon said that nobody's going to be laid off, but no one is believing them because they have a history of buying mills and then eventually saying, well, maybe we have too much production here. We'll have to shut it down. Got a comment here from Dave McCall, president of the Steelworkers Union, also a proud sponsor of America's workforce. This is what Dave said. The USW welcomes President Biden's statement on the proposed USS Nippon deal and shares his concerns over the sale's long-term implications for our economic and national security. Allowing one of our nation's largest steel manufacturers to be purchased by a foreign-owned corporation leaves us vulnerable when it comes to meeting both our defense and critical infrastructure needs. The president's statement should end the debate. U.S. Steel must remain domestically owned and operated. Dave went on to say President Biden told USW members he has our backs, and there's no question that he meant it. We're grateful for his unfailing support and his ongoing commitment to advancing the interests of working families as well as their communities. Now, the AFL-CIO, on behalf of Secretary Treasurer Fred Redmond, also spoke out. Fred spent his entire life with the Steelworkers Union before moving over to the AFL-CIO. This is what Fred said. The most pro-union president in our lifetime once again showed he stands firmly with working people. President Biden promised steelworkers he'd always have their backs, and that's precisely what he did with his call to keep U.S. Steel American-owned and operated. The president is revitalizing American manufacturing with his Investing in America agenda, at long last prioritizing building things in America again, from roads and bridges to renewable energy, high-tech semiconductors, and more. Biden is getting it built in America with good paying union jobs. Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. 7,000 Daimler Truck North American workers have voted by a resounding 96% to authorize a strike if necessary. Now, the contract covers 7,000 parts and assembly workers in North Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee, and expires on April 26. The workers who build Freightliner trucks, Western Star trucks, and Thomas built buses are facing declining real wages and job security against a backdrop of rising cost of living and massive profits and shareholder payouts by Daimler. In a video released by the UAW, and you can see this on their website, uaw.org, in that video, the workers spoke out on the declining standards of the company that have led to their willingness to stand up and fight for better wages, benefits, and job security. Get this, Daimler amassed nearly $6 billion last year. In addition, the company plans to spend billions of dollars on stock buybacks over the next 2 years while lavishing millions of dollars on its shareholders. In a recent interview, Daimler Truck CEO Martin Daum boasted that the company's profits are red hot, and he claimed that any leftover money certainly belongs to the company's stockholders. Dom, by the way, received over $7.5 million in total compensation. That was last year alone. By the way, the Daimler workers are the latest UAW members standing up to corporate greed. Thousands of UAW members have won record contracts in the last year, and that includes auto workers at the big three automakers and Allison transmission workers. That would be in Indianapolis, Indiana. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Adam Keller on behalf of the Valley Labor Report. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel. For more information, America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Melissa Cropper will be joining us, who is president of the OFT. She'll be joining us tomorrow. Right now, though, let's go down south to Alabama and join Adam Keller. Adam is the co-host and co-producer of the Valley Labor Report. He's also a political coordinator for his union, IATSE 900, and he's involved in, my gosh, he's an organizer. He's an activist. And just a couple of weeks ago, he was involved in the Poor People's Campaign march and rally. Adam Keller, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks once again for joining us. Boy, you never give up. Boy, you got a lot of fire in your belly, brother. You know that, don't you?
Hey, that's what it's all about. Fighting for people power, solidarity, unionism, anywhere I can spread that good word, I am down to do it. You know, it's an uphill battle down here in Alabama, so you got to have some fire. You just have to, and you have to keep it burning. I always appreciate the opportunity to speak up for working people whenever I get the chance.
Boy, good point on Alabama. Now, Alabama, among the other southern states, is probably more unionized than the others, especially like Mississippi and Louisiana. But you're making strides. There's no doubt about that. Talk to me about the Poor People's Campaign. It did get a lot of media play, and it was also a national day of action. And you spoke at it. Let's talk about it. Kind of go back to that time and tell me what happened there.
sure. It was on March 2nd, so we started the month with a National Day of Action. The Poor People's Campaign marched and rallied in over 30 state capitals, as well as D.C. Reverend William Barber is leading up that effort. Of course, you know, hearkening back to the original Poor People's Campaign, which was Dr. King's last effort before he was killed. And so it's a really important movement, I believe, to really amplify the voices of poor folks in this country, particularly here in the South where poverty is so rampant. So it was an honor to be invited to speak. I was asked to speak about Medicaid expansion on behalf of the Cover Alabama Coalition, which is obviously an issue that, that deeply impacts poor people, particularly the working poor folks who, you know, make too much money to get Medicaid under our really strict requirements, but not enough to afford health care. And we're talking hundreds of thousands of our neighbors, right? And so that's, to me, we have to stand in solidarity with folks. An injury to one is an injury to all. I really do believe that. I think that's what our movement is about. So, it was definitely an honor to speak there. There was a lot of union folks there. I was really glad to see that. Ran into siblings from the United Campus Workers, UAW organizers from the Hyundai plant over in Montgomery, some of my brothers and sisters from the CWA. So that was great to see the union involvement in that. And I'm really looking forward to making more progress. I know there's going to be follow-up actions, including in D.C., but it's one of the themes of the event was to wake the sleeping giant, right? That there are millions of poor and low-income voters who, by and large, are disengaged from the political process, but who have the most to lose and the most to gain, right? And so it's really important that we organize among poor folks, because this is the wealthiest country in the history of the planet, and it is a shame, the struggle that so many of our brothers and sisters are going through.
Adam, have you gone to these poor people's campaign marches before? And I'm just wondering, if you did, how did this compare to the ones in the past?
You know, this was my first taste of it. I've been following their work over the years, and I'm a big fan of Reverend Barber and the work he's been doing out in North Carolina. But this was my first involvement, so I was really, you know, glad to see the turnout. It was a pretty good turnout, especially for sort of a dreary morning. You know, there was a really diverse crowd, too. There were young people there. There were some students there on a field trip, actually, which I thought that was really neat. But we also had, you know, some elderly Catholic nuns who were marching right alongside me, right? So it was a cool crowd of folks. Which tells me there's people interested in this. There's people who want to speak up for working people. So we got to just keep building on that momentum.
So that was on March 2nd. The next day, you're in Selma for the 59th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. Now, I know that got a lot of play, and our Vice President Kamala Harris was there as well. All right, talk to me about that time. That had to be pretty interesting for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was really neat to be in Selma during the Jubilee. I got a chance to go with my wife back for the 50th anniversary years ago. And like you said, the vice president was there. A lot of people were there. It was really busy. But I got a chance to speak at an event oriented towards youth and college-aged kids. The League of Women Voters worked with the NAACP to do an event called Next Generation Powering Democracy. And there were about 500 students there. And I was asked to talk about organizing, which, you know, hell yeah, of course I'm going to do that. Anytime yeah. I get a chance to talk about organizing, especially with young folks. So, you know, that was my message, was about the power of solidarity. I talked about, you know, the old mantra that we have of educate, agitate, organize, and how that's really our mission and it's our calling. We are here as a movement to build people power, and organizing is about, you know, moving others to collective action. It's not just what you can do to make a difference, but it's who you can do it with and how many other folks you can get involved in the process. It's about turning, you know, hostile folks and opponents into neutral, turning our neutrals into supporters, our supporters into activists and growing those activists into leaders. Ultimately, you know, addition and multiplication is the name of the game, not subtraction and division. And so I really appreciated the opportunity to get a message like that out to young people, to encourage them to organize, not just at the ballot box, which they heard a lot about, of course, over the weekend, understandably so and appropriately so. But you have to organize not just at the ballot box, but in the neighborhoods and communities, in our workplaces, obviously, you know, coming from a labor perspective, but organizing in our churches, in our campuses, online, offline, wherever we can reach folks and grow solidarity, because that's going to be our greatest tool to make a difference.
And if you want to make a difference, you got to vote. And unfortunately, in your state, the state of Alabama, you got some lawmakers there that are coming down with some pretty restrictive bills. Let's talk about absentee voting rights. What's going on there, Adam?
Sure. There's a lot happening in the Alabama legislature. They're halfway done. And unfortunately, they've been up to a lot of foolishness. You mentioned the absentee voting rights. So there's a bill, Senate Bill 1, and what this will do is criminalize assistance with absentee voting. So a lot of people, when they need to vote absentee for various reasons, they get help with that, right? It could be a family member. It could be their union advocate, right? Like you mentioned, I'm the political coordinator for our local. So one of my responsibilities, you know, that I take seriously is trying to get our membership engaged in the process politically, get them registered to vote, get them to vote, right? And so, you know, whether it's a union organizer, a friend or family member, a neighbor, a church member, a lot of people go to folks for some assistance with filling out the absentee ballots. Not always easy. And we're also talking about folks potentially with disabilities who may need assistance. But this is being criminalized because there are folks in the legislature among the supermajority of Republicans who believe there is quote-unquote ballot harvesting taking place. They can't fully prove this. I've seen no evidence that there's actually something called ballot harvesting taking place with absentee ballots in the state of Alabama. But, you know, evidence has never been something that drives them, unfortunately, when it comes to legislation like this.
Right.
It seems to be in response to, you know, political talking points that are being put out in extreme right-wing media, but not really in touch with reality. But unfortunately, you know, this bill has passed, and a lot of folks in the nonprofit space, groups like the League of Women Voters, disability advocates, very concerned about how this could impact get out the vote efforts, particularly among marginalized communities.
And Adam, I'm also reading about a private school voucher scheme. This one's called the Choose Act. So they want people to choose which schools they can go to and use public money for that. Is that what's going on?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, the war on public education has really ramped up in Alabama. And this Choose Act is going to put public school dollars into private pockets. You know, that's the big picture of it. But where it starts is with $100 million coming out of the education budget, which will be sent to folks in the form of education savings accounts or ESAs. It's like a tax credit, they're calling it, where folks can get up to $7,000 to subsidize private school attendance. There's also going to be money, a lesser amount set aside for homeschooling. So, you know, it's using public education dollars to subsidize these private choices of folks to choose to go to the private or homeschool option. And unfortunately, they rammed this through the legislature very quickly. And I was really disappointed to see that a lot of the education groups did not fight particularly hard on this. It seemed like it was kind of a done deal once the governor made it a priority. The legislative leadership fell in line. On the show, on the Valley Labor Report, we actually interviewed one of the bill's sponsors in the Senate, and he wasn't even particularly proud of it. He just sort of made it clear that this was a priority and it was going to happen whether or not he was involved or not. And so they rammed it through the legislature. This is going to have a long-term impact on public schools, right? Because public schools in Alabama are not particularly well-funded. They're not equitably funded. There are so many needs. We don't even have universal pre-K. We don't even have air conditioning on buses. There are just so many needs. I could go down the list that our public schools are, you know, public schools just have a lot to invest in when it comes to the state of Alabama right now. And it's sad to see privatization continuing to grow. And like I said, a lot of the education groups didn't fight particularly hard on this. I was really proud that Alabama Arise was the only group to testify against it in committee. And I was proud of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT. Their president, their national president, Randy Weingarten, actually held a press conference in Birmingham in opposition to this bill. So I was proud of Arise and AFT for fighting the good fight. But, you know, this is going to have a longstanding impact, and it's being paired with more cultural attacks on the schools as well. That's going to have an impact on the ability to teach in the classroom, the ability to teach the truth, because there's a ban on diversity, equity, and inclusion that also includes a ban on quote-unquote divisive concepts. And so me, as a former public high school history teacher, you know, I'm just thinking back to whether or not half of the curriculum I was teaching is even going to be legal in the state of Alabama moving forward. It's a really dark time for education down here.
Yeah, Randy was on our show last Wednesday, and she touched on that, not specifically to Alabama, but what's happening around the country, and I know a lot of it started in Florida. That is a sad state of affairs, no doubt about it. Adam Keller joining us on our live line today, co-host and co-producer of the Valley Labor Report. TVLR.FM is the website. We'll continue with Adam. We'll talk about child labor laws and also more on organizing. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Liliana Calderon on behalf of the bricklayers and allied craft workers. Talk about women getting involved in the trades. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Adam Keller on behalf of the Valley Labor Report. TVLR.fm is the website. It's Alabama's only union talk show, now airing on four radio stations across three states. That would be, in addition to Alabama, Louisiana, and now Kentucky. So they are growing, much like America's Workforce. I said that at the beginning of the show. You know, labor is hot. Last year, you know this, Adam. Last year was a banner year for organizing, getting contracts. You got the big three. You got the Teamsters, my union, SAG-AFTRA, healthcare workers. So it's good to see and hear what's going on, especially in the South. I know you want to touch on organizing, especially among the auto plants down there. But, you know, in the last segment you did with us here just a few minutes ago, you were talking about the legislature. And I'm reading that Alabama is among the states where they want to loosen up child labor laws. What age do they want to start down there? Are we talking 9 or 10 yet or what?
Well, Lord, don't give them any ideas. I got to say, yeah, it's daunting to think that we as a movement are having to fight back against child labor in the year 2024, but that's the case. We appear to be moving backwards in so many states, and, you know, many of these states are getting these bills from special interests, and it's no coincidence that this seems to be a concerted push. And it has touched here in Alabama. We currently have a work permit rule for 14 and 15-year-olds, which to me is a very reasonable thing. We ask that the 14 and 15-year-olds get a permit signed by the school, you know, of course, assuming they're attending school. And it's just a little check and balance. Make sure that the little Johnny is attending class. They're not truant from school. You know, they're passing their classes. But there is a bill that is sailing through the legislature right now that would remove that work permit for 14 and 15-year-olds to make it easier for them to get in the workforce and to have less accountability to check on that. And obviously, we're really concerned about that because you know, the answer to a quote-unquote labor shortage, to the extent that that's real, is not to flood the market with children. I mean, that is just, it's offensive. And so the idea that we need less regulations on child labor, particularly in, as we've seen in recent years, these scandals pop up with illegal child labor. And so there's already room for 14 and 15-year-olds to work legally. There doesn't seem to be a need for this. Again, on the Valley Labor Report, we interviewed the same senator who happens to be sponsoring the Education Choose Act, also is sponsoring this bill. And he couldn't point to a single example of where a work permit had been unreasonably denied. Right. So it's a legislation, piece of legislation that's not addressing a real problem. But it is part of a you know, a scary trend of loosening child labor laws. We've had a lot of incidents of child labor happen here in Alabama that were really concerning, particularly in the Hyundai supply chain with kids, really young kids, younger than 14, who were working illegally in these plants. So, you know, that's concerning. There are a couple of good child labor bills that are being debated in the legislature, one of which would actually increase the penalties and fines on violators of child labor laws. So that is a good bill. There's also one that would attack the subsidies and incentives that companies get if they violate child labor laws. So, you know, there's a couple of good pieces of legislation that would actually move us in the right direction. It's unfortunate we've got this other one moving us in the wrong direction, but that's where I think, you know, ordinary people have to speak up. People have to get in contact with their legislators. They have to email them and call them and write them and visit with them as often as they possibly can. And that's especially true for organized labor. I think we as union members have a special responsibility when it comes to child labor advocacy. That's part of our historic mission. So, you know, that's what I'm encouraging all, you know, my labor brothers and sisters out there to get involved in this struggle and to really get in touch with legislators and let them know how you feel about this, because they need to hear from everyday people and not just corporate special interests.
Yeah, and especially with a supermajority like you have in Alabama, you got to work even harder to achieve that. Very sad, very sad. And that's, there's supermajorities in many states right now. Let's move on to organizing here. I know you want to do a shout-out here to the CWA and your union, IATSE. So what's the story here?
Yeah, I'm proud to be a member of two unions, CWA and IATSE, and I got to say they're both really crushing it right now. At least from what I can tell, they're really racking up some wins. Starting with CWA, they're winning in some small shops like Alliance Mobile and Wells Fargo Banks, including across the South. They're also doing some really cool work in the public sector with United Campus Workers. They just got a huge win in the video game industry with Activision workers. So really proud to see the energy that CWA is bringing. And IATSE has been on a roll lately as well, particularly with some of these unorganized parts of the entertainment industry, thinking the video special effects workers, the VFX department. They have been racking up a lot of wins there as well. And of course, IATSE is at the bargaining table right now with the big Hollywood studios. So definitely sending my support and solidarity to my IATSE siblings out west as they deal with this major contract. But kind of paying closer attention to the South, the National Nurses United, NNU, has had some big wins down here, Austin, Texas, and New Orleans. So that's exciting to see. I think there's a ton of potential in the healthcare sector down here in the South. But, you know, the biggest story is definitely the UAW and the progress that they're making. Out in Troy, Missouri, workers at a critical Toyota plant launched their public campaign to join the United Auto Workers after more than 30% signed union authorization cards. So they've hit that threshold there. That's exciting. I think that's the first one at Toyota so far. So that's really big news. Toyota is, of course, the biggest auto manufacturer. So they've also hit more than 50% cards at Volkswagen in Chattanooga, not too far from me. And then outside of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, at the Mercedes plant. So that is just huge to know that they've got over 50%. And not too far away from Tuscaloosa, over in Montgomery, they've got over 30% at Hyundai. So, you know, to see that kind of progress on a campaign that really just went public in the last few months, right? That is big. And UAW has announced they are investing in new organizing in a really big way, millions and millions of dollars. So that, to me, is going to energize this entire movement. I think the UAW already has energized this entire movement. Everyone I talk to in labor spaces, whether it's here in Alabama or, you know, virtually, you know, across the country, everybody's excited about it. And, you know, to see auto workers from the bottom up organizing and to see, you know, the way the union has really supported that and facilitated that, it's been exciting to see. I think it's historic. We'll see, you know, as things pan out, you know, when it comes to election time, when we see more and more responses from the politicians, as we've talked about on this show before, you know, Alabama's politicians are not super thrilled about what's happening, to put it mildly. But, you know, despite the nonstop deluge of op-eds and billboards and online ads, their propaganda doesn't seem to be working.
That's good to hear. Kay Ivey is the governor of Alabama. And didn't she say something like the UAW is like some foreign interest or something? They're coming in and invading her state. Didn't she say something to that effect?
She did, yeah. She had the gall to call them an outside special interest while she was, you know, advocating for literal foreign interest in the terms of Hyundai and Mercedes,
right?
Out-of-state corporations. And, yeah, there's been a lot of op-eds coming from various business leaders and Republican politicians and government officials. It's about every other day or so, at least a couple times a week on Alabama media, there's a new op-ed out, claiming that UAW wants to turn Alabama into Detroit. Calling UAW an outside interest, claiming the workers don't need a union. They're already well paid. Just the typical anti-union responses, they're being floated out. And, it's the business class, it's the political class, but you don't see many actual working folks that are writing these op-eds. I'm sure that's not a coincidence.
Adam Keller, on behalf of the Valley Labor Report. He's co-host, co-producer, also a member of IATSE Local 900, the CWA, and an organizer for Alabama Arise. I tell you, you got your hands full. Great job as usual, my friend. You take care, and we'll talk to you down the road. Okay, brother?
Thanks as always. Love and solidarity from Alabama, y'all.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Liliana Calderon is with the Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers, works out of Local 21 in Illinois. She's moving right up the ladder. She's going to talk about her journey next on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hey, this is Sean McGarvey, and I'm president of North America's Building Trades Unions, and I'm a proud listener of America's Workforce. I love this podcast.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office. Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies formed out of a need to provide affordable health care to teachers, to loggers, and to miners. Well, In 1965, the Blues developed the National Labor Office to strengthen its commitment to organized labor. And today, Blue Cross and Blue Shield's National Labor Office remains focused on America's workers advocating for affordable and equitable health care, partnering with strategic alliances to provide industry-leading products and services, and proudly serving more than 18 million unionized workers, retirees, and their families, working hard for America's working families, for the health of America. You can learn more by following them at Blue Labor on LinkedIn and X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, let's go to Chicago right now. Welcome a newcomer to the show. That would be Liliana Calderon. Now, Liliana is the Director of Health and Safety for the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. BACWeb.org is the website, and we're still in March. March is Women's History Month, and Liliana is one of many women making history. Liliana, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. I was reading earlier you became a bricklayer, started in the apprenticeship program back in 2007, and that would be Local 21 in Chicago. What made you go in that direction? Did you have family members that were bricklayers, or somebody said, hey, there's some great opportunities to become a bricklayer? Talk to me about that part, Liliana. It's all yours. Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you again for having me on. So honestly, it dropped into my lap. I went into a career fair, and I was working at a bakery catering, and I just said, you know what? That sounds like something I can do. I like working with my hands, and I kind of just got into it. No one in my family has done construction before, had not been in the trades, so it was something new for me, and I really was up for that challenge, you know, being very aggressive at trying to do things on my own and using my hands to do some good work. I really wanted to take that challenge. And, you know, 17 years later, here I am, still a bricklayer and loving what I do.
I like it. And you climbed up the ladder, too, with the union. I appreciate that. I'm sure you appreciate that. But as far as getting involved in the trade, take me back to that time when you got into the apprenticeship program. Being a female, was that difficult for you? How were you treated during that time?
You know, it was challenging. There were two women in my class. It was me and another lady and 14 other males. So it was challenging. It was intimidating, but I was treated fairly. You know, the instructors at the training center were great. They understood that, you know, everybody there had challenges, had never, you know, touched trowel, mud. So, I mean, my experience was challenging, yes, because I'm a woman and less upper body weight, but I made up for it. And, you know, I decided that I would take a block home and pick it up at home and do, you know, pick them up and walk them, because that's part of our training was to walk them. And, you know, you got 30 pounds in each hand. It's hard, especially if you're not used to it.
Gotcha.
But I got to say, the people there, the trainers, everybody in leadership was great. And Bob Arnold, who was my mentor and is my mentor, great ally.
I'm sure there was a lot of pride, especially when you completed your first job as a bricklayer. How did you feel after that, Liliana?
Oh, man, it was amazing, you know, because all of a sudden you start out, there's no brick in a job, there's no walls, and then, you know, a couple months go by, a couple weeks, depending on the job, and that one job that I did, all of a sudden, it was up, and you walked away from it, and it was beautiful. It was glazed block, so it was really pretty, and I mean, the sense of pride that I felt was amazing, and I can go back to that site or that location and tell my friends, my family, look, I helped build that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I understand you're one of the leaders in what's called BAC Sisters. That's Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. Sisters RISE. RISE stands for Resource for Inclusion, Success, and Empowerment. Now, is this like a new division with the Bricklayers Union? Give me some details on what this is all about.
Sure. So we put together this group And this group really is not a new division. It's more of a group so that the BAC sisters have a place for support to talk about, you know, what's going on the job site, how we can be helpful, how we can empower each other to kind of do the same thing I've been doing, right? Climbing that ladder into leadership roles. And it's been working out great. We started it back in 2021. We have about 161 members right now that are engaged. We have monthly virtual forums where we come on and discuss different ways to empower each other, different ways to build leadership skills. We meet once a year at Trades Win Build Nations. That's through NAPTU, North American Building Trades. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. I mean, this last year, there were up to 4,000 participants, 4,000 tradeswomen in D.C. It was a sight to see, you know. If you were there, you felt that energy. And we really have put together this group to kind of help each other. And I think in our retention also, because we have problems with retention of women, even, you know, males alike. But this group really is to help each other, build each other, and help each other stay in this trade.
I heard nothing but good things about that that convention, and I understand it's over the past couple of years. I know because of the pandemic they had to do it virtually, but it's really exploding right now. And you feel, I mean, obviously, you know, 17 years as a bricklayer, you've seen a lot of changes, especially in the trades, and they seem to be understanding that they have to change if they want to get some more women and people of color involved. Isn't that pretty much what's happening right now?
Absolutely. I mean, all our allies are doing the same thing. You know, we want to be more inclusive to women, to people of color, just because we know that this is a great opportunity. These are great jobs. I mean, I can speak for myself and probably for many of my brothers and sisters. This career has given me much, much more than just a skill. It's given me support, financial support, stability. It's great. So I really liked that this is happening all across, right? And most of the trades are being more inclusive by offering maternity programs. We have a maternity benefit, disability benefit, that helps members that if they become pregnant, you know, they get the $600 help for the first 6 weeks for a normal pregnancy, for 8 weeks if they have a C-section. So these are ways that we're trying to engage that population, right? And we also have a discount for childcare, because we know that childcare is a problem not just for the women, but for also the men out there. So we offer a discount on childcare as well.
You know, with these things that are added right now, you mentioned retention too, and I heard this from a number of trades where they're saying, you know, they women get involved in the trades, and then all of a sudden, you know, they got to get up early. There's kids, you know, childcare, maternity, all these issues that you just talked about. Say, you know what, I can't do this anymore. So you're seeing the change happening right now because of these programs, Oleana?
Absolutely. You know, more women can are coming in knowing that they have this benefit and this help from the union, and not just our union, but all the other unions out there. And NAPTU has also put together a women's child care pilot that's on the second year now. They're doing one in Milwaukee and one in New York. They're seeing what works best for the members, right? Whether it's a stipend to help with the cost of child care, because it's not cheap. So, I mean, it's not just our international, but also NAPTU doing this, because they know and we know that it's important to make sure that we have access to child care while we try and go make a living for our families, right?
It's right. That's what it's all about. Well, Liliana, I'm going to button it up there. I want to invite you back on the show because I know you're Director of Health and Safety. I want to talk about that. Also want to talk about the Trades Women Build Nations Conference. I know the next one's going to be just as explosive as the last one, and we want to continue on that trend. So if we can do that, I would be greatly appreciative, okay? Can we set something up in the not-too-distant future?
Absolutely. I would love that.
Okay. Liliana Calderon, Director of Health and Safety, Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers, BACweb.org is her national website. You take care, stay safe, and stay strong. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the Real News Network. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.